Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Tony Alvarez. Tony is a very successful investor and part-time trainer, mentor, and we welcome him to our show.
Good morning, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
Tony, how did you get into the real estate investment world?
Well, that was a few years back. I started back in 1980, and I used to be one of those guys that would sit up late at night watching all the infomercials and all that kind of stuff. Back then, it was Dave Deldato and a bunch of other people. And honestly, I pretty much bought everything that was on TV. I don't think there was a program that I didn't buy.
Okay. But,
you know, I really wanted to become a real estate investor because it sounded like the perfect thing for me. And then that led me to appraising, actually, because I quickly realized that all the stuff that they told you on some of those infomercials, when you really went out to the field, it wasn't quite as easy to actually implement some of those things. It seemed like everybody got to be a millionaire overnight, and I was having a hard time getting past my first single-family home. So I decided to become a real estate appraiser so that I can understand value, and I took off after that.
Anybody in your family involved in real estate prior to you?
You know, yeah, and that was probably my first experience. I didn't realize this until after I was already in the business a while, because I was kind of drawing on my dad's and my mom's history.
Mm-hmm.
When we first came, because, you know, we came from Cuba. So I wasn't actually born here. My father decided to move us up to Massachusetts and stuff. And we started out living in subsidized housing. And from there, we ended up, moving into a regular three tenement apartment building. And we used to see our landlord used to come by every month. And that was really, you know, when I think back, that was one of the first experiences that it turned out to be pretty positive for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think of the landlord coming by. Eddie Murphy used to do a thing like kill your landlord, that whole thing. You know, you think of your landlord as the big bad guy coming to get the rent. But we actually used to love this guy. He was an old Italian guy named Mr. Folletti, and he used to come by, you know, pick up his rent. My mom would make espresso coffee. Back then it was really inexpensive, not like Starbucks. We thought the guy was great. He'd come in and he'd talk to us. And he talked my dad into buying that three tenement from him.
Okay.
For no money down. That was a great experience. My father was like, you know, off the charts because we'd never thought we'd get to that point. And then my dad went on to buy the one across the street. And we used to do, he used to have my brothers and me do all the fix up work, which I hated. I did, you know, I remember throwing off, they had the old tubs, you know, the old cast iron tubs. And I remember throwing one of those off in the middle of the winter, throwing it off the third story because I was too lazy to carry it. You used to have to get inside of it like a turtle shell, you know, and carry it down the stairs. And I told my brother, don't worry, I got this figured out. Watch this. And then I threw it off. Well, in the middle of the winter, you got all the moisture and stuff on the driveway, and they're asphalt driveways. Well, that thing sunk about, you know, a foot. And my father came, and we were trying to pry it out of the thing, you know, so he wouldn't see it, and I could blame that on something else. But I almost got killed that day. But that was my first, my first exposure was watching my dad, you know, start buying stuff. And
all right. Now, in the 80s, you got an interest rate that's crazy. I mean, 1980 in particular, in 81, was probably 17% interest.
Yeah.
So what did you buy and how did you finance it?
Well, actually, I started out buying little single family houses. I think the first one I bought was in Burbank. I bought a little two bedroom, one bath house on a street called Lima Street. And it was, from what I know about real estate today, I probably would have never touched that.
Mm-hmm.
It was next door to a parking, to a commercial parking lot. And in that parking lot was one of those places, what they used to call that business, when somebody passes away and you take them in to be cremated as opposed to being buried, I figure the Neptune Society or something.
Oh, okay.
So they actually used to do the cremation stuff right there.
Okay.
So it was not a good purchase, but I actually went on to make quite a bit of money with that house. But my dad helped me a little bit with the down payment money and stuff like that, and we actually did get regular financing on that house. I think the purchase price was $78,000. I went on to sell that house for As I recall, and my memory's getting a little bit bad, I think it was about $150,000 a little bit later.
Okay. Now you got involved in apartments as well?
Yeah, later on, I went on from that house. I then went and I kind of started to specialize right in the Burbank area. And I was buying little two-bedroom and three-bedroom houses. It's actually called the flats in Burbank, as opposed to going up the up to the hillsides. And then after that, I was working at the same time. I was working as an appraiser, and I ran across these guys that were actually originally from New Zealand, and they were quite funny. There's two brothers. One of them, who I became very good friends with, I nicknamed him Tweety Bird because he actually looked just like Tweety Bird. And then whenever he would land a deal, he would jump up and down. He reminded me when Tweety Bird would get excited, you know. This young man was buying apartment buildings, and he was, he'd only been in the country a couple of years. And he actually used to work for Kirk Kerkorian, which was interesting. He worked for Kirk as like a, kind of like a houseboy kind of thing, ran errands for him, mm-hmm. and his wife was working as a maid. But I was amazed because I would go out to do some of the financing, and they were buying anything from duplexes, fourplexes, and then they started going up to, 10, 20, 30 unit buildings.
Okay.
And he didn't see the limitations that I saw. Now, I had been trained as an appraiser now, so I'm looking at, I can't do this, that's not possible for me to do. Well, I would see these guys doing these deals, and they were buying stuff, and sometimes they were tying it up and flipping it to another investor, and I thought, you can't do that. And he would laugh at me, and finally he invited me over to his place, and they had a little guest house at Kirk Kerkorian's home. And Kirk Kerkorian had actually taken him aside and given him some tips as to how to get into the marketplace. So in his mind, he didn't really understand the whole system here of financing and all that, but he had very little limitations. And that woke me up. That was one of the things that I looked at him and I went, oh, my God. So here I am trained here in the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
And I'm being fed, limitations, which nowadays, whenever someone asks me, what do I think is the main reason why new investors fail? And I go right to preconceived notions, because I was a perfect example of that. I was limiting myself only because of these ideas these convoluted ideas and restrictions that had been fed to me. And here's these guys from New Zealand that don't, they really don't have a pot to whatever in, yeah. and they have no restrictions. They're just wide open.
They didn't know it was impossible, so they did it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually went on to do quite well for himself.
Well, brokers are in a way like that. Brokers and dealing with lenders and investor offers, there's a preconceived notion for them that this is going to get rejected.
Exactly.
And that's the box they live in.
Yep.
And, therefore they don't buy too many wholesale deals. And they're always quite surprised when one's accepted.
Yeah.
Well, at least most of them are.
Yeah, yeah. I've learned over the years that when I choose different brokers to deal with, there's going to be, especially if it's a new person, there's going to be an education process, and I'm the teacher in that case. And so you have to learn to do that in a very patient and calm way so you don't test
one of
off.
The two is going to be a teacher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, most investors aren't usually strong enough to do that.
Well, yeah. Now, I mean, I've gone through, for example, when I mentioned the first house that I bought in Burbank, I was definitely the student in that moment. And there was a defining moment, and I've discussed this before with you in the past, where I was standing in front of the house and I was looking at it, and my mother was with me. And when we opened up the front door, birds flew out of where the windows were supposed to be, and there's no windows. And I was standing in the street looking at this house, and I was petrified. I mean, I wanted to buy, but I was really scared. And the agent walks up to me, puts his hand on my shoulder, and I never forget. It's like I'm looking at the guy right now. He's in a suit, I'm in my jeans and my typical sweatshirt, He looks perfect. He puts his arm on my shoulder and he says, "You better buy this because it's a great deal." Now, in that moment, he didn't realize it, but he did the best favor for me he could have ever done, because I realized in that moment, I don't have a clue if this is a good deal or not. I'm totally relying on this guy mm-hmm. who I met just recently.
And who's on commission.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't buy, he don't eat,
Yeah.
I thought, oh, my God, that's actually what led me to become an appraiser, by the way.
So you can be independently capable of...
Sure.
Following your own shots.
And still today, when I'm speaking to someone and they say, what's the first thing I ought to do? My questions really go, you know, sometimes I hate giving an answer to someone just from my own experience. Immediately when someone asks me a question, especially if I know it's a new person, mm-hmm. I go right back to them with a question. And then I see a blank stare in their face. And one of the questions, people will come up and say, well, should I get in the market right now or shouldn't I? So my question to them is, okay, that's a... You know, if you really think of the market, you know, you hear these things about, well, you know, the market is down in Southern California so much. Well, in what neighborhood? What exactly? I know that's an overall number, but just about where it is. So my question to them is always, well, what market are you buying in? Or what market are you intending to start in? Mm-hmm. And there's usually a blank stare, and they go, well, wherever I can find the deal. Mm-hmm. So I immediately say to them, well, I know they're selling houses really inexpensively down in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And then they have a blank stare. And I say, okay, so are you starting to get this? You know, you're asking me a loaded question. And if you really want an answer from an investor who has experience and knows what he's talking about, he's not going to give you a general answer. He's going to ask you, you know, give me something to work with here. And what I usually find out is they're out there trying to figure out how to get a deal, but they haven't figured out where. Well, if you want houses for free, you can go back east.
Yes.
You know, if you want
$100 or less, yes.
I can tell you where I grew up in Massachusetts, you can get a great deal on houses, but you wouldn't want them.
No. A lot of those homes, yeah, back east. Because we hear there's I don't know the gentleman's name, but I know it's real. Guys sells houses to California investors, 20 houses for $140,000, $7,000 a piece.
Right.
And people buy them sight unseen because it has to be a good deal.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you find out. And in his disclosure, it's the most hilarious document you'll ever see. Number one is these homes may have been scraped and not exist.
Right.
That's part of the disclosure. And he has no trouble selling everything he has constantly.
Well, I spoke recently at an investor club for Steve Love. And I had a lady come up to me at the end, and she said, thank you very much and all that. And then she said, oh, by the way, I'm buying houses, and I'm getting them for free pretty much and stuff like that. And, you know, if I was a little bit newer in the business, I'd be really interested. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would have had my attention. I would have probably gone home with her. You know what I mean?
Where can we go next?
Yes. But, you know, something inside me, and I've learned also, you know, we have five senses and then we got a sixth sense. And whether you call it your intuition or whatever you want to call it, that guides me nowadays better than anything else. And immediately I said, that's a very nice thing. I wish you a lot of luck. I hope it's okay. She almost seemed like a little disappointed that I didn't take that conversation further.
Right.
But I'm not the slightest bit interested in any of that nonsense.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the most dangerous things I see people doing is trying to make up for lost ground. So they
right.
did something not correct in, let's say, 06, 07, and now they've lost their fortune. And now it's things like that that they're trying to make up for lost time by doing what seems to be obviously got to be smart because it's almost free.
Yeah.
And it becomes a nightmare.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's a gambler's attitude. And I'm familiar with that. I mean, I've lived through that myself. You know, hopefully we mature as time goes by in this business like we do in our own lives. And, I mean, but I've been there. I know what it is. You know, you make one bad deal, you think, well, I gotta raise my ante here.
Double and then, down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta make the next one twice as good or
yeah.
something like that. No, that's I talk to a lot of people that we teach and I'm just going, oh man, I hear that desperation in the, in their voice, and they're going, okay, well, I mean, I got to, whatever, what state, you know, just like what you said, wherever it's possible, I got to go there. And they don't realize, I mean, this is sort of the epicenter of possible at the moment, wouldn't you think?
Well, absolutely. Well, you know, and I have to qualify that answer by saying, for me, it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people in Florida, maybe Alex, your friend, you know, who I now know and I adore, but, you know, he may think different. He may think, you know, Florida's the place to be because they've got some prices reductions.
No,
going
he thinks
on
California's pretty much it, too.
Yeah.
He just can't move here
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, that's true. you know, that whenever I see somebody who's kind of anxious, you know, and I can relate to that, you know, In the teaching side of this, you know, because I struggled with, you know, do I have anything really worthwhile to say to somebody that might help them accomplish their goals, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I went through and I divide, you know, when I talk about what I do, I divide about performance and relationship building and all this. And then I identified a third part, which I call the third element. And I know, and I don't talk about that a lot sometimes, because what happens is that has to do with our internal decisions, how we work internally, and people don't necessarily want to go there a lot of times. You know, they want to talk about, okay, what can I do? You know, where's the house? Where's the deal? Where's the thing? You know. That they can handle, but when you start asking them about, okay, I've seen you at every seminar, at every class for the last 3-4 years. Yeah, how many houses have you bought?
Yeah, so you must have the basics right, but something else isn't right.
Yeah, there's something missing. Okay. And here, to get it into a nutshell, because, you know, not getting, obviously we have time restrictions, but I've identified one thing. Fear is at the heart of a lot of things that we do or don't do.
Okay.
For example, when interest rates, a few years back, when interest rates were low, I mean, they actually got it one time, and this is going back a few years, they broke 5%. I had a mortgage broker friend of mine who called me and said, I just locked my interest rate in, man. I've been waiting for this. You know, oddly enough, the rest of the market wasn't really doing anything. You know, everybody was kind of watching, waiting, you know, how low are they going to go and all this kind of stuff. Then the news comes on TV one night and says, interest rates ticked, you know, quarter point. You better hurry up and get out there because whatever, whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So now here's a segment of the population right now sitting on the sidelines because they're afraid of not knowing where the bottom is. That fear, for the most part, will not be replaced by the courage to take action. It'll be replaced by a new fear, which will be the fear of being the last man in.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a fear of losing something. And believe it or not, my opinion, whenever we move as a result of any of those fears, we don't really accomplish ultimately the goals that we want to accomplish. We end up going sideways, and then we're not really confident about the decisions we're making. So that's, you know, that's an area that I like to get involved in whenever I speak. Whenever I get a chance to speak in front of a crowd, I like to remind them that, you know, they really need to analyze how they make decisions and try to get away from making them fear-based and being anxious and all that kind of stuff, kind of chasing their tail. You know, and start to take steps to make themselves feel a little bit more comfortable with what they're doing.
See, now that, okay, when you have a fear, it's like an onion, okay? You get to the core, and then all of a sudden you find the core has lots of stuff too. So why the fear? And how do you get the fear not to rule? And that usually comes from some education and some dealing with what's inside yourself.
Well, without a doubt.
Yeah.
You do training courses and stuff, and then you also have your boot camp, and I think that's probably one of the best things. I attended your boot camp, and I attended your boot camp when I was already, you know, I had some bucks in the bank, and I had been around for a while. And I think anybody, regardless of who you are, if you're in the business and you go into the business saying, you know, oh, geez, I don't know if I want to spend this kind of money for this, I don't know if you're going to, then you're really at a disadvantage. If someone is willing to take you by the hand and say to you, here's the phone. They're going to put it in your hand. They're going to go dial this number, call these people, do this. Let me show you what's really working in the marketplace. That's priceless.
Yeah.
You know, yet, you know, there are folks out there that will spend $120,000, like you said, to buy some houses that may or may not exist based on the price because they're thinking, oh, I'm stealing something.
Right.
But yet they won't put in some serious dollars into their own education. You know, they see that as, oh, man, what am I really getting? They don't see the value of it.
No.
You know, but yet they'll go to, you know, they'll go to all the freebie stuff. They'll go to a class. They go to this. They go to that. You know, they go to a meeting some night, and they listen to 50 million different people give you their opinion, basically, mm-hmm. of what you ought to be doing.
You know, I used to be very suspicious of educators myself. I mean, the first seminar I attended is the one I gave. And that was just because I was cheap, and I thought that was wise. And now I'm very different. And that's why, you know, Mike Cantu's recent management seminar, and that was basically me bringing it up to him. Why? Because I wanted to understand how he manages 30 properties or more with people walking up and putting a check in the slot like robots and never talking to him.
Yeah, and in all honesty, if you have accomplished any kind of success at all, one of the things you learn is no matter how much you know that you know, there's always things you know, you've already learned, there's a lot of stuff that you have no clue you don't know. And you're not going to find out unless you pony up and show up and put in the investment that you have to, whether it's in the form of time or dollars.
Sometimes it's just being quiet for 8 hours. In other words, just concentrating on something.
Sure.
And you know, you attend seminars, Mike attends seminars, I might attend seminars where you know this stuff at probably as well as who's giving it, except for maybe there's an inspiration or there's one other added thing where you go, oh, wow, that's a big deal. That's a twist I hadn't really implemented. And usually the most knowledgeable people get the most out of the education experience. That's
I agree. I attended Mike's course, and I've been I've managed hundreds of properties for myself. And I obviously it's a different segment. He owns properties in different type of neighborhoods. His is more the cream of the crop. I think he referred to mine as the cream of the crap, which he's very accurate about some of those things. You know how Mike-isms I call them.
Yeah.
And I like Mike very much. He's probably one of the brightest people that I've ever known. And he has an ability to really hone in on what's really important and cut out all the other crap. So when I was listening to him speak, I was writing stuff down. I mean, I was sitting next to someone and they're going, "What are you writing?" I said, "What are you talking about? You have no clue what this guy just said." And you get that when you attend anybody's stuff that's actually done something, that not just talked about it, but actually got out there and did it. Because he's going to learn. He's going to have life experiences that are going to be completely different than mine. And I'd rather learn it at his seminar than experience it on my own. So, if you've ever gone through any kind of financial problem, which I have, I've been through bankruptcy. I would have much rather paid those legal fees up front to somebody who could have told me about that. And I tell you honestly, penny for penny, I would have paid those legal fees up front just to avoid everything else that occurred in my life. Emotionally, that was the disaster. Mm-hmm. The money part of it, who cares? But the emotional part of it, coming back from that and what it does to you internally, if I can avoid that at any cost. So you don't have to convince me. Believe me, I started out by telling you I bought every course. I'm a seminar junkie. I will attend anybody's thing. If they even pitch their marketing in a way that they get my interest and go, is that something I could learn? I'm there. And, even if I walk out thinking, okay, I got one thing out of it, I'm okay with that.
The we have a couple minutes left in this segment.
Sure.
The things you have in common is that both of you solve the monthly nut.
Right.
And how important is that to making calm decisions?
Well, it's at the foundation of it. I don't have to get out of my bed. You can't make me sweat. Nothing you can tell me short of there's been an earthquake, all your houses crashed, all your tenants left for Florida. You can't explain it. And on my part, it almost makes you too lazy. I'm lazy enough as it is without that motivation. But knowing that that security is there, it really is. It's a form of security. It makes I'm hunting and I'm picking the stuff that I want to buy. And every time I buy something out of my area, I laugh at myself because I remember when I would be desperate. I mean, I would be like, I'll buy anything, But when you have that kind of security, that's taken care of, you're in no hurry. You can afford to sit back and, you're watching everybody else run around like a rabid dog and you're just saying, okay, I made some good decisions. But I have to tell you something. I've been in the rental business for a long time. But when I first attended, and this goes to also the value of education, because it's not just about the person who's up there teaching you, but it's about the people that go there that are around you that you have no clue. You've never met them before. Mm-hmm. I met Mike Cantu at your classes. I make Rick Solis at your classes, at your seminars. And, those people have become invaluable to me as far as advice and friendships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike, a couple of things that Mike has told me over the years, I sat with Mike just like I did with you with my spreadsheet at the beginning, and I was baffled. Where do I go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Look at all this money. I was actually confused about what to do with millions of dollars,
All right. Well, listen, we need to stop this segment. We will pick up on the next segment. We'll kind of go from there. Tony, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.